We're discussing saliva-based tests that show promise for widespread COVID-19 monitoring and efforts underway to advance this form of testing at UW-Madison. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. If you want to know if you're infected with the COVID-19 virus, there are a couple types of tests, molecular and antigen testing, and these tests are done with a nasal or a throat swab. But a test detecting the virus in saliva could make testing easier and expand capacity. Would you prefer a saliva test to a nasal swab? What do you want to know about the reagents and how the testing works on your spit? It's 800-642-1234. Dave O'Connor is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at UW-Madison. He's leading a project using saliva samples to test for COVID. David, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, as of last month, the FDA had authorized the use of saliva as a sample for testing in 5 different tests now. What are you working on?
So we're working on a type of non-diagnostic test that could be likened to a fancy fever check. So if you go into a building and they stick one of those thermometers up against your forehead, and if you have a fever, they might not let you in. And we're working on a testing version of that where you would give some saliva if you show up at a school and they would test the saliva. And if it shows that you might have coronavirus genetic material in the saliva, they'd say, well, you know, this doesn't mean that you're infected, but it means that you should probably go home and get a follow-up diagnostic test. And so this is what we call non-diagnostic testing. And its real advantage is that it can be done outside of conventional laboratory settings.
Okay, so this is a kind of a form of triage, if you will.
Exactly. We know that we need to get more testing into schools. And unfortunately, most schools don't have, you know, molecular biology labs in them. And so the sort of, you know, licensed diagnostic testing that you currently get if you go to, say, the Alliant Energy Center here in Madison isn't going to be available there. So we're trying to bring the testing to where it's needed.
You know, the cost and access to these labs, to the reagents, it's all been an issue. Do you anticipate supply shortages if saliva tests come on strong? I'm thinking about the vial you spit into.
Well, I think that, you know, that's always going to be an issue is supply chain. But, you know, we for our saliva test, use a very simple, small piece of plastic. You know, I've never thought about there being a limit on plastic straws that you can get at McDonald's, and I don't think there's any reason why you would necessarily have limits on simple plastic tubes either.
So when you spit into the plastic tube and you hand it over, what happens?
So after you spit into a plastic tube, we have someone heat up the sample so that it inactivates the virus. And then after that virus is inactivated, any sample that had virus in it, it's safe to handle. Someone then adds a couple of chemicals to it, heats it up again for another half an hour. And then there's a color change from pink to yellow if there's evidence for genetic material for the virus in the sample. And so we just look at it and say, okay, well, this sample turned yellow. So this individual should be notified that they might be infected and should isolate and get a follow-up diagnostic test.
But meanwhile, you know, that person can't be standing outside for a half hour waiting for that initial triage sample to come back. You know, how would you approach this test?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So what we've been doing since we started in July is having people provide consent to volunteer for our testing and then provide the saliva on site. And then we test it, and a couple hours later, we would notify a physician to contact people if anyone needed to be contacted. We're just starting this week working towards something where people can just drop a sample off in a Dropbox and get notified a couple of hours later. So we're looking to reduce that days-long delay that often happens when you submit a sample to, like, Exact Sciences or one of the other diagnostic testing companies to a couple of hours. But then the next generation of tests is hopefully going to reduce it further to like 15 minutes. We're not there yet, but we still think that several hours is better than several days.
And how long can that spit specimen stay active and be, you know, a good specimen?
Yeah, so I've learned more about spit than I thought I'd ever know this summer. And it turns out that it's really, virus is quite stable in spit, and it can actually be pretty stable at room temperature for up to, 5 days or so. So if someone collects a sample at night and then drops the sample in a Dropbox for us the next morning, it should be totally fine.
Matt from Wausau emailed to ask how many tests a day would be effective to slow the growth and spread of COVID-19?
That's a great question. And the answer is it's a massive, massive number. Right now, when we have so much virus in our communities, we would need to be testing places like schools multiple times a week. And that's going to be a really expensive proposition. And you need to be talking probably about billions of tests nationwide, if we were serious about trying to test our way out of the epidemic. What we think is that this is where testing at the point of need is most important. So if you needed to do those billions of tests, as good as our diagnostics laboratory system is, there's no way that any diagnostic lab system can handle that sort of influx of samples. What you need to do is you need to borrow a lesson from other sorts of infectious disease responses in places like sub-Saharan Africa, where, we've been working on HIV for a long, long time. And you need to work on task shifting so that the testing can be performed by people who are less skilled. So instead of trying to say, well, how do you have a billion places or a billion tests performed a week in centralized labs, you instead ask, can you have, a million people performing 100 tests or 1,000 tests a week? By training a cadre of people who, aren't necessarily skilled laboratory workers to perform very simple tests without a lot of training. And so that's sort of the model that we're hoping to work towards is one where you have tests that are performed by people who are not skilled molecular virologists, but rather just have the ability to follow simple recipes. And be really meticulous.
We're talking with Dave O'Connor, who is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at UW-Madison. He's leading a COVID-19 non-diagnostic saliva testing, and we're getting his insights at 800-642-1234, taking your questions as well. So, Dave, I understand that you're running outdoor testing stations in Madison, as you said, which involves gear being loaded and unloaded from a minivan. What is this van? What is the equipment like? And how are you moving it around?
Yeah, it's a UW-Madison branded Dodge van that we can shove all the laboratory gear in the back of. And again, this gets to this idea of having simple tests that don't require the sort of fancy, laboratory, equipment that you might see in like a CSI show, but instead just requires a couple of card tables, a couple of, heating ovens, and a test that you can read by just looking at it. And I want to emphasize that this sort of test is a stopgap to what's likely going to be coming either later this year or early next year, where you're going to have what's been called antigen testing, where it's the same sort of idea, except it hopefully will be even easier, like doing a home pregnancy test, where you'll collect a sample, you'll apply it to a card, and then the card will change colors or have a couple of bands appear when a sample is positive. Our test is sort of a primitive version of that still requires a little bit more hands-on manipulation. But the advantage is that the sort of testing we have is available today, and those antigen tests are just now starting to be distributed. And so we can learn lessons about how to use this sort of testing now that we can bring to those antigen tests once they become more widely available.
What do your numbers show? How sensitive is your test in detecting virus?
Yeah, so we've run more than 2,500 tests in the Madison area since July, and we've had that about 15 people get that unpleasant call from one of the physicians on our study saying you really need to go isolate and potentially get a diagnostic test. And I think that 15 into 2,500 illustrates, two important things. The first is that most of the time, most people who feel fine are in fact fine. So, if you don't feel sick, you go to school, you're not sick. It also indicates that a test that has even a small number of positives is probably going to have false positives when you have a relatively low prevalence in whatever community is that you're testing. So of those 15, about half of them turned out to be true positives when people went to get diagnostic tests, and the other 7 or 8 people ended up being false positives. So of course, we're working on that, trying to improve the true positive rate. But we need to be understanding of the fact that as we deploy these tests at scale, you're going to miss some people, but you'd rather get the people who are highly contagious out of schools or out of workplaces, even if it means that a couple of people are inconvenienced with potentially false positives. I would be the first to admit that our testing is not perfect, but I think it sure beats the alternative where there is no testing on a routine basis for non-symptomatic people in schools and workplaces, which is what we have if we don't have some form of testing like this.
We have UW-Madison pathology professor Dave O'Connor with us as we look at the rollout of this saliva testing for COVID-19 that shows promise for greatly being able to expand capacity. Have you been tested for COVID-19? Have you taken a saliva-based test or have you volunteered for one? What was it like? Would you be more apt to take a test if it were saliva-based? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dave O'Connor here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with UW-Madison pathologist Dave O'Connor. He's leading a COVID-19 saliva testing project that is working on a less invasive, more cost-effective way to test for COVID that is non-diagnostic. FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn said last month in a statement that processing saliva samples to test for COVID-19 infection is groundbreaking in terms of efficiency and avoiding shortages of crucial test components like reagents. So, Dave, you're currently working with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and Medicaid officials to see how this test could be further developed to comply with regulations. Where are you at in the regulatory process?
Yeah, so it was a bit of good news last month when the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services said that universities like ours can perform surveillance non-diagnostic testing like this and can return results back to individuals and refer those individuals for follow-up diagnostic testing. So that clarification was really enabling for us because it means that we now know that we're on solid footing in doing this sort of testing and trying to figure out how to make it so that someone who gets a result from a test like ours can get reflexed over for diagnostic testing at somewhere like the Alliant Energy Center, if you were here in Madison, or other diagnostic testing through your healthcare provider elsewhere in the state.
Your testing has also included athletes at UW-Madison. With the Badger football season returning, how involved do you foresee being, in the testing of players?
Well, that's a great example of where I think things are going to go. So it was announced a couple of weeks ago that the return of Badger football was going to be enabled by daily antigen testing. So these are these tests that I was talking about before the break are going to become more widespread and more available later in the year. And the conference has procured access to those and is going to begin daily testing of the football team with them this week. But those tests weren't available when that announcement was made about 2 weeks ago. So we've been working with the athletic department to do daily testing with our test as a stopgap until those antigen tests become available. And it's that same role that I think we foresee having with schools and other places where you have people living in close and working in close proximity until antigen tests become more widely available nationally.
Let's take a call now. Kenneth is joining us from Janesville this morning. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. Why have you, so to speak, reinvented the wheel in that here in the state line area? I've been hearing about the University of Illinois test, several months ago, that they've been using that sounds better than what you're talking about. Do you know anything about their test or whatever?
Absolutely. So it's a great question, Kenneth. It's one we get a lot all the time. And the answer is that their test also uses spit as what they test, but that spit gets transported to one of these centralized laboratories that has, you know, millions of dollars of equipment and instrumentation in it. And what they do is they then test the spit with a PCR test, the same sort of PCR test that you would usually give a nasal swab for. So it's a huge advancement because it's a lot easier to give spit twice a week for testing than to have a nasal swab twice a week. But at the back end, that test is still being performed in a fancy molecular biology laboratory. Our testing takes a different approach, which is that we have a simple, low-cost lab that, you know, costs less than $5,000 or so to equip. And the lab can be brought to a school. It can be brought to a place that doesn't have one of those fancy molecular biology labs. And you can have lots of these individual, you know, pop-up lab testing sites that can perform what is called LAMP testing. That's the sort of amplification technology that we use. And that works, you know, it also amplifies the virus like PCR, but doesn't require the fancy instrumentation. So Illinois' testing program is great. They can test up to 20,000 samples a day in their high-throughput molecular lab, but all the samples go to one place. What we would say is that if we wanted to test 20,000 people a day with this sort of testing, you would set up something like 50 portable pop-up labs in different locations, and each of those labs would test a small number of samples. So they both start with spit, but they look very different when you're trying to set them up to cover a wider geographic area.
We're talking with Dave O'Connor, who is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at UW-Madison, as we discuss his work to develop a saliva test for COVID-19. So, Dave, who do you envision who you can train up to run these pop-up testing sites?
So this is also a great question. So we've been so far focusing on having skilled scientists do most of the testing, because the first question everyone always asks is, well, is the testing itself accurate? And to get the best sort of accuracy, you want to have people who are really well trained performing the test. But now that we have, you know, a couple of thousand tests under our belt, and we have a pretty good sense for how the assay performs, we want to start training people who are less skilled and figuring out how to get the tests in working well in their hands. So we're beginning to work with undergraduate students from UW-Madison who we've employed to work as part of this project. We're starting to talk more seriously with school nurses and people who are in K-12 learning environments who are not professional scientists. And that's one of the things that we're going to be working on over the next month or so, is trying to see what happens when you task shift this to people who are not scientists or professional scientists most of the time, and figuring out how we need to either change the workflow or change the protocol so that people who are unfamiliar with it can be successful with it as quickly as possible.
And your research team is made up of scientists from UW-Madison's AIDS Vaccine Research Lab, which has studied Zika in the past. How does studying COVID-19 compared to the research, and how does, you know, the research you've done in your lab on AIDS and Zika inform what you're doing now?
Yeah, so this sort of test that we're using right now is the sort of test that in the past we've seen used to diagnose infectious diseases in places like Uganda. Again, because you don't have the laboratory infrastructure necessary to do testing in remote areas or in places that are resource constrained. And I never thought we would find ourselves in a situation where here in the U.S., our diagnostic testing capacity would be so overwhelmed that most people wouldn't have access to enough testing to do things like keep school safe. I just never imagined it would happen. But here we are, and it's going to be very, very difficult to increase the centralized laboratory capacity because those labs are expensive. They take a long time to build and maintain. And so we said, well, what can we do to create, pop-up testing that looks more similar to what you would do if you didn't have a lot of resources in some of these other resource-constrained settings? And that was the initial catalyst for working on this test, along with some work that came out of Wuhan, China, very early in January, showing that this sort of testing could accurately identify people who were infected with this new virus without all of the overhead that you needed for conventional PCR testing.
Very quickly, in the last few seconds we have together, what do the next few months look like for you? What do you foresee?
I hope we spend more time getting schools familiar with this sort of testing and seeing if we can make going back to school as safe with frequent testing as being home from school without frequent testing.
Dave, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dave O'Connor is a UW-Madison professor of pathology and laboratory medicine, and he's leading a new COVID-19 test, non-diagnostic test, surveillance test with saliva samples. Just ahead, we discuss how an endangered animal could be responsible for bringing COVID-19 to light. A journalist is with us to explain the growing threat of zoonotic diseases. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.